Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, December 14th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. They're there gratefully through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice, who maintain that website and this internet show for the sole purpose to be of service, to be of value. And that website, if you go there, whyagain.org, and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional state into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. You can click on the link, download it, print it off, and copy it and use it as often as you'd like, absolutely free. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process and or given powerful testimonials about how the use of that worksheet process in their life has improved the quality of their life. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app. That app contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope that you will do that soon and often, because that frequently leads people to have comments or questions or testimonials to share with us. And if you have any of those, you can give us a call at 563-999-3581. When you call that number and press 1, it puts a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year, and that is in conjunction with the Course in Miracles experiment lessons from Pam Grout. And I just finished a session with a patient where we talked a lot about anger and judgment. So I'm going to back up to yesterday's lesson, lesson 347. Coincidentally, maybe not, reads, anger must come from judgment. Judgment is the weapon that I would use against myself. Judgment. Think about that. Judgment is the weapon I would use against myself. And when I use it against myself, it keeps the miracle away from me. Amazing. When I would use judgment, it keeps the miracle away from me. Judgment is a weapon I use against myself. Today's lesson simply reads, I have no cause for anger or fear, for the Creator surrounds me, and in every need that I perceive, the Creator's grace suffices me. Creator's grace suffices us in everything that the Creator would have us do, and only that we choose to be our will as well as His. The Course in Miracles experiment lesson from Pam Grout's book, the 347 lesson simply reads, putting on my big girl panties. If you argue for your limitations, sure enough, they are yours. That's from Richard Bach. Pam writes, when I was a kid, I loved playing hide-and-go-seek. One of us would be it, and the rest of us would hide in Mom's closet, underneath the coffee table, or if we were playing outside, behind the neighbor's shed. The whole point was to find someone who wasn't really missing. One exuberant, oxen-free was all it took for us to reunite. Lesson 347 points out that I'm still playing a childish game of hide-and-go-seek. Not only do I spend most days covering my eyes and counting to 10, but I waste my time searching for things that aren't really missing. My culture trains me to find problems, limitations, and mistakes. It trains me to then devise plans to fix them. The Course says my time would be better spent recognizing that in reality, nothing is missing. Recognizing that it only appears missing because I spend time looking for it. When I say, I want this, I make the assumption that I don't already have it. When I say, I need to be healthier or more spiritual, I immediately embark on a journey to find the very things that are already my birthright. It's only my decision to seek something that creates the perception that it's concealed. A Course in Miracles reminds me that I already have all of the love, all the abundance, all the joy I need. And at any time, I can quit playing make-believe and just say, thank you. I can pretend to be lacking. I can profess the need to be skinnier or wealthier or shacking up with Mr. Right. Or I can acknowledge that I'm the one who made the obstacle course. And I can call oxen-free. That's yesterday's lesson. Today's lesson 348 reads, Larry, David, or Mr. Rogers? She quotes Sarah von Breathnach as saying, my most profound lessons about life, love, goodness, and courage were revealed through gratitude when heaven and I were barely on speaking terms. Pam writes, back in Paleolithic times, survival depended on keeping a mental file of which berries were poisonous, which rocks made the best tools for fending off mastodons and giant sloths. Lesson 348 says those days are long gone. It says there's absolutely no reason to hang on to pointless information regarding our survival. We are literally surrounded by the dude's love. There's absolutely nothing to fear and no cause for anger. Today, instead of working to ensure my survival, I celebrate all that I have. I see my life as a grand unfolding of grace. Mr. Rogers, here I come. So that's the Course in Miracles workbook lessons for yesterday and today, and the Course in Miracles experiment commentary from Pam Grout. And as usual, we've got about 50 minutes to entertain your comments or questions. Call in number 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. You can make a comment about the show from yesterday or anything else we've talked about in the past 10-plus years, almost 11. I got a note today that the second half of this show will not be Michael and Jeannie. It will be a replay because Jeannie has COVID and is quite sick and is welcoming any loving thoughts, prayers, blessings, healing energy you want to send her way. And I would encourage you to do that throughout the day. Whenever you think of her, just send loving thoughts and blessings, seeing her as in her wholeness, seeing this as working out as a blessing for everyone involved. And if it is to be so, that she's healthy, wealthy, and wise in no time whatsoever. And I would add to that, anybody else who's had the coronavirus COVID symptoms and or been negatively affected by this pandemic, whether it's because of the restrictions or because of the illness or because of losing a loved one, it blesses us all when we choose blessing as a mode of operating. I mentioned earlier when I was reading the Course in Miracles lesson that I had a patient just left the office who was talking about judgment. And amazing synchronicity with that Course in Miracles lesson. And he was talking about how he knows that he makes strong negative judgments about a particular person that he sees regularly at meetings he attends. And he was asking me, because the last time we'd had a session, he was questioning it, and I was talking about the difference between judgment and perception, or discernment, judgment and discernment. And with discernment, I can see the differences between one thing and another, and I don't judge one is right and the other wrong. I just notice the differences. I'm awake, I'm aware, I'm alive in the moment, and I'm allowing everything to be what it is. And because I'm allowing it, I'm awake and aware to it. If there is something in the current situation that needs attention, I'm able to give it. If there's something that my presence, my skills, my my history, my training would benefit from having me, you know, step in and take an action, I'll be able to discern that and move from direct observation into action effortlessly. However, if I judge that person is wrong, that's bad, that shouldn't be happening, I create a tension, I create a negativity, and I'm adding a negative energy to the situation that's unfolding in front of me. If we haven't been taught this, if we haven't had the chance to slow down and observe this, then we don't have options. But as soon as we get introduced to this as a way of observing life flow and energy, now we've got options. Now, instead of simply reflexively responding with judgment, I can slow down, take a breath, and discern what's going on, what's called for in the moment, what are my resources for responding. And when I do, I usually will respond in a way that serves more to be a blessing to myself and others than it will happen when I judge, when I have a negative response. You know, there are so many different ways to talk about it. When I judge, when I have anger for somebody, when I judge somebody else is wrong, essentially it's like I want to throw a hot coal at somebody, so I pick it up with my bare hands and I throw them a hot coal at them. Well, in order to do that, I have to burn my own hand first. Another way to talk about it is when I hold anger or vengeance for somebody, it's like me drinking poison and hoping somebody else will get sick. The negative energy that we engage in literally initiates dis-ease in our energy system. This is, we've talked about it many times, it's in the Way of Mastery where it says, if you could see what happens in your body when you judge, how the very cells in your body cease to function properly, if you could see that, you would never judge again. Well, that's just like what Bruce Lipton, a cellular biologist looking through an electron microscope at human cells, came to understand. There are only two modes of being for that cell. One is health and growth, and the other is shutdown and defense. And when a cell goes into shutdown and defense mode, it refuses to take in nutrition. It doesn't rebuild worn-out parts, and it doesn't eliminate waste. So if a cell stays in that shutdown and defense mode too long, it literally dies. It dies by starvation and by drowning in its own waste. Well, the cellular biologist takes it to another level and says they have identified that there are receptor sites on each cell, on the membrane of each cell. And those receptor sites actually tune into the mind energy of the person. And so the cell responds to my mind energy if I choose a negative interpretation of life or a fearful interpretation of life events, the cells in my body go into shutdown and defense mode, even if there's nothing in the physical environment that they need to shut down and protect from or defend against. So when I go into judgment, I literally initiate a process that, unless it's brief, temporary, fleeting, and I flow out of it into something else that's more like health and growth, it will initiate disease and eventually death to the cell. This is why so many, I just heard another medical doctor explain once again how the American Medical Association itself says 90%+ of all chronic illness is stress-related. It's because of this very thing. Our stress response, our fight or flight or freeze response, was intended to be a very brief temporary response to an immediate physical danger. That's how the system evolved, and that's what it's supposed to be. Well, when there is no immediate physical danger, and we create the stress response in our minds, then we can maintain it over longer and longer periods of time, which initiates decay and disease and eventually death in our tissue. That's not a very wise thing to do. So when we wake up and realize that that's what we're doing, the choice is obvious. Relax. All right, let it go, stop it, relax, take a breath, choose again. Choose for calm, choose love, choose peace, whatever phrase you want to use. That's what we're up against. If we can't bring ourselves to do that, we can't heal, we can't relax, refresh, restore. I haven't mentioned it in a while, but there's a video you can watch on YouTube. It's Stress, Portrait of a Killer. It's a documentary about this very thing. And it's fascinating that, you know, here it is probably at least, I would imagine, that particular documentary is over 10 years old. But they just keep learning more and more good, important things about the value of relaxation, about the devastating effects of long-term stress. And when we understand that we are the ones who are choosing and then maintaining our stress response, if we can understand how simple it is to, with practice, not necessarily easy, but simple, to move from judgment into discernment, and how when I discern something, no matter how intense the situation is, it's less stressful than if I judge it. I've spent, quite a few years, probably 7 or 8 different jobs I had earlier in my career, where I worked at a place that had very disturbed, wounded, needy people, and I was one of the large, healthy, vigorous employees who was trained in various ways to restrain somebody, keeping everybody safe, whether it was a juvenile hall or a psychiatric hospital or an alternative therapeutic school or a jailing facility for nonviolent adult male offenders. And in every one of those where I was trained, the training was about how to stay calm. And every time I stayed calm in various real-life intense situations, things worked out beautifully. And in the few times that I was in those situations where people, the employees that were supposed to be helping keep everybody safe, when they would get agitated, anxious, intensely emotional, that's when people would get hurt. So it is the best option for everyone's health and safety to stay calm, even in highly intense situations that demand a quick, effective response. There is no need to escalate to fight or flight mode, to get the adrenaline pumping, to stay in that high vigilance. I remember a number of years ago now, looking at the Harbinger Institute, and you can find them if you, you know, search for it. And the Harbinger Institute was using the very same kinds of things that Dr. Michael Rice teaches and Guy Finley teaches and the Optimal Being Program now teaches through Journey's Dream, etc., that love and respect and collaboration and cooperation are highly preferable to this testosterone-driven competition, adrenaline-pumping. And there was it was somewhere in the southern U.S., and maybe it was Texas, but they had a SWAT team that had this reputation for creating havoc. And they would be called out for these high-intensity drug raids and all kinds of different intense situations. And the Harbinger Institute people were asked to help them because while they had this high rate of resolution of difficulty, they were creating more trauma and drama and community disfavor than it was good for the police department to put up with. So they brought in the Harbinger people. And as you might imagine, they've got these male and female, high-intensity, ultra-trained SWAT team professionals that are trained to just kick butt, knock down doors, blast things open, sniper people from across, you know, the street from a building top and just wham, bam, get it done. And all of a sudden they're sitting in a room with people who are talking the way Dr. Michael Rice talks, the way we talk about here on Mind Shifters, and talk about collaboration and cooperation and love and discernment rather than judgment. And as you might imagine, they were highly resistant. And the Harbinger people took their cameras in there and they monitored the training. And you can watch the dramatic shift as these professionals learned this is a practical set of tools. This isn't just Pollyannish, you know, happy, joy thinking. If you can stay calm, as Rudyard Kipling would say in the poem, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can stay calm in an intense situation, it'll go better. You'll be safer. The people that you care about will have better results. And sure enough, as they went through this training and they applied these tools and techniques, that SWAT team ended up getting better results and better community relations. And they were safer. The actual SWAT team members didn't have as many injuries, and the community didn't have as many injuries and doors broken down, et cetera. So I love, and I quote it fairly often, what Guy Finley says about this. He says, there is nothing more practical than true spirituality. And to define spirituality in that statement, I would say the ability to actively discern in the moment what's truly going on, what's actuality in the moment. Free of judgment, free of distortion, free of intense emotional response. That's the most practical thing. And if you can get into a situation where you can see and feel and hear the best things happening most clearly and directly, when you're not distorted, your perception isn't going to be distorted by anger, by fear, by sadness, by hurt, you will see what's going on more clearly, and you'll act in a way that's more highly beneficial to you and everyone else involved. And I've lived it. As I said, I had 7 or 8 or 9 different jobs where they were 24-hour staffings, and I was a part of the cycle. It was in the, you know, 7 to 3 shift, 3 to 11 shift, 11 to 7 shift, and I was responsible to support people who are going through traumas in life and mental health crises and jailing facilities and juvenile halls. And the more calm I stayed, the better things went. And I think I've already mentioned it in my talk so far this morning. The only time that I remember people getting injured were when staff members got emotionally reactive in response to either the patients or the inmates' upset. But when the staff members could stick to the training and stay calm, and even if somebody was coming at them swinging a fist, respond peacefully, quickly, but respond peacefully, everything went better. So there's a deep practicality to what we're offering in all of these tools. And the practical application of these tools has made my life better by leaps and bounds over the last 17, pushing 18 years now. So hopefully you had another perspective yesterday if you were listening to the Richard Moss interview, where he's got the very same knowledge and wisdom, a slightly different way to talk about it to help people conceptualize being in the now moment and being able to get more and more clear and discerning when my thoughts are about the past, or my thoughts are about the future, or my thoughts are about somebody else, or my thoughts are about me. And the thoughts distract me from that critical present moment awareness, being in the now moment, being open, being able to flow with the events of life, being able to respond without tension and resistance and judgment. And when that happens, my life starts to go better and better and better and better. So we've got about, however long we want to talk, because the second hour will be an audio replay. Because as I mentioned, Michael and Jeannie are trying to attend to Jeannie, who has rather severe COVID symptoms. And any thoughts and prayers you would like to send their way are greatly, gratefully accepted. And so we've got time to talk. Comments, questions, answers, 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1. We can have a conversation. Yesterday I did an interview with yet another medical doctor who had the conventional medical training and then just felt called to find out how to be more practically useful to herself and her patients. And so she, after getting the medical degree and becoming a surgeon for ophthalmology and all of that intense training and doing eye surgeries for people, et cetera, then she decided to go back and get trained in what they're now calling functional medicine. More and more doctors are finding that the conventional medical training they're being given is woefully lacking. It's great as a system, but it isn't so useful, practically speaking, to help people build better, healthier lives. So that's another interview that depending upon its final edited version, I may or may not share with the Mindshifters radio audience, but it will be available at journeysdream.org/podcast if you're interested. And for me, it's kind of a positive, uplifting thing to realize how many people are, and these are, you know, fairly brilliant medical professionals, are waking up and saying, you know what, the training I got is not adequate to help me help myself and my family and my patients. Fortunately, great minds have been working with that dilemma for a lot of years, and they have developed things like the functional medicine training and the integrative medicine approach, and some people call it holistic, some people call it systems-based. So there are things that we can do that medical doctors can learn, like Dr. Jody Skillicorn, who as soon as she graduated with her, finished her residency for psychiatry, soon after that happened, somebody gave her the book by Robert Whittaker on Anatomy of an Epidemic, and she was shocked to learn of all the research that's not hidden anywhere, it's just not widely promoted, but the research that demonstrates that all these medications that she was trained to give people for psychiatric problems, they end up causing more problems than they solve. And she was shocked to discover what's available, what's been known, that she wasn't introduced to at all in her medical training. And then she, you know, much to her credit, as far as I'm concerned, she put herself back through other training for either integrative and or functional medicine training so she could learn how to help treat things like depression and anxiety and obsessive compulsive disorder or symptoms without loading people up with medications. And then she wrote the book, Treating Depression Without Medication, by Dr. Jody Skillicorn. And I was fortunate enough to get her to agree to, I believe it was 3 separate interviews. So if you go to journeysdream.org/podcast and search for Jody or Skillicorn or Treating Depression Without Medication, you can get access to at least 2, if not, I believe it's 3 different interviews we did to talk about specific things that she helps people with. Other than just, here are your symptoms. All right, take this pill. So, to me, it's uplifting, it's optimistic, it's positive that, yeah, there are some gaps and holes and problems with our conventional medical model, and yet there are all kinds of people out there looking for good alternatives. And so be optimistic if you want. You can be negative if you want. But our request in this work, our call, our offering is watch what you do inside your mind-body-energy system every time you choose the negative. Every time you go negative, watch what happens. So, 563-999-3581. Today's a Tuesday, so I should mention we have a Mindshifter support group that's going to happen tonight. If you or somebody wants to join, you know, would like to join us, the information is at mindshiftersacademy.org website. The groups on Tuesdays and Thursdays when they run from 6:30 to 9 p.m. And we'd be happy to have you join us and or happy to have you pass that information along to somebody that you think would benefit. I had somebody who was dealing with the difficulty understanding the difference between judgment and discernment and believing from their training that judgment was necessary. And we just, you know, we invite people who are in that mode to just observe what physical sensations you experience when you judge something negatively. That's the easier way to go about it. The fact of the matter is whether you judge something negatively or positively, you're going to create a stuckness and a tension. This is what Michael Singer talks about when he says, look, our lives are just this flow of creative energy. And we, who we are, our essence, is the ability to be aware of that flow of creative energy. And so, as Shakespeare would say, nothing is either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And we are supposed to be able to watch the flow of life coming into and through us moment by moment and just appreciate it as we would a symphony or a play or a ballet, as this process of life unfolding. And sometimes it's quite intense and sometimes it's quite subtle, and it's all okay. It's all just the flow of life. as we say, oh, I really like this and I want more of this, we try to grab onto the flow. It's like trying to grab onto the water in a stream. And as we experience something we don't like and we say, oh, I don't want this, and we try to push it away, it's the same thing. It's like trying to push away the water in a stream. And that's the essence of that is judgment. If I am saying this is good, I create a blockage in the flow of life stream. If I say this is bad, I create a blockage in the flow of life stream. If I try to hold on to the flow of life, an event, a moment, an emotion that I'm experiencing because of the unfolding of life in the moment, I create this blockage. Now, in the work that Michael Singer was talking about, he calls it a samskara. This is a disruption in the force, in the energy field. And it's those samskaras that we create when we judge something as bad or good, either way. It's those samskaras that we create that are responsible for the seemingly endless series of negative thoughts that we have. Right? I mean, we're all aware that we have a lot of negative thoughts in our minds. And Michael Singer, in his work, helps us track down what's the cause of this seemingly endless series of negative thoughts that I have. He says quite clearly, quite directly, that cause of that negative thought process in my mind is my trying to cling on to certain events or push away certain events in the flow of life. And if I would be free of that tense, seemingly endless flow of negative thoughts, I need to be willing to step into the allowance and surrender that's talked about in the Way of Mastery as the keys to the kingdom. I need to be able to just accept that life is this flow and it's all okay, that whatever happens is going to work out in ways I could never imagine, probably better than anything I had planned for life to be. And when I step into that space and I just watch how life unfolds the way I would watch a ballet or a symphony, I'm not judging it as good, bad, right, or wrong the way I would a football game where I've got a favorite team and I want them to win and I want the other team to lose. When I just embrace life and its flow of energy, I have a very different experience than I do when I judge it as right or wrong, good or bad, up or down. So there's our discussion about the value and the importance of learning to move from judgment into discernment. And I had somebody in the office yesterday who's just very well practiced at this point in her life at moving into rage, at moving into negative judgment, at judging conservative political people, at judging those who would, oddly enough, judge somebody negatively because of their sexual orientation or their gender preference or their political alignment. And so she's literally creating internal physical pain. She's creating anxiety. She's creating anger. She's creating disruptions in her sleep through the process of judging. What's she judging? She's judging other human beings who are out there in the flow of life, just doing the best they can in each moment with whatever resources they have, just as she is. But rather than allowing and accepting that, rather than choosing to view everyone that she interacts with as another being of brilliance and light who's either temporarily forgotten or has yet to discover their brilliance, or as somebody whose actions are best interpreted as a call for help and healing whenever there's something less than loving, then what she does to herself is so harmful that she's ending up going to doctors, trying medications, an endless series of techniques and you name it, dietary changes, meditations, etc., when the source of the problem, the primary source of the pain and suffering that she's experiencing is her practiced habit of judging others negatively. I found myself just saying in amazement earlier today, it's amazing how powerful this is and how it is not taught in our schools. So if you can choose to just observe, what does it feel like physically, mentally, and emotionally when you judge, good or bad, the tension, the restriction, the physical sensation that comes when you judge, good or bad, if you can let that be your guide and then choose again, as Diedrich Wolzak would ask us to do in his six-step forgiveness process, as the Course in Miracles asks us to do over and over again. When you experience something that's less than loving, when you wake up and recognize that it's painful, that it's sad, that it's scary, if you could give yourself permission to choose again, you will have you'll have all the proof you need. You'll have the life experience. You won't need anybody's teachings to guide you. You'll choose again, and you'll choose love. You'll choose life. You'll choose flexibility. You'll choose the flow of life, which is healing. And if you want any assistance specifically, go to whyagain.org, whyagain.org. Click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner. Download Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. Print off the worksheet process itself. Start applying it in your life. And then give us a call. Let us know how it's working for you, or let us know if you want some assistance in becoming more proficient in the application of those tools. I had somebody in the office yesterday, his second session, and it was a very it was an unusual situation. And in the very second session, I ended up giving her a copy of Three Early Memories of Conflict. And I don't understand exactly, you know, what it was, but I had this urge to just jump to that. And it's needed because she's got the belief, the rigidly held belief, that it's other people's thoughts, words, and deeds that are creating her emotions. And when I started talking about how it's our thoughts about those situations, our interpretations of them, that is creating the hurt that we experience, is creating the constriction and contraction we experience, she got incredulous. And she said, but wait a minute, what about this and what about that? And I said, well, take a look at the three early memories of conflict exercise and wake up to how most of us are reliving events, patterns, decisions, judgments that we downloaded in our first few years of life, and we're replaying them automatically moment after moment, year after year, so we're not living a 30 or a 40 or a 50-year lifetime. We're living 5 or 6 years over and over and over again. We are automatically producing the judgments and the tensions and the constrictions that are responsible for our life upsets, and we're doing it without knowing it. We're doing it by how we're choosing to interpret and then respond to the life that is unfolding around us. And the tools are here, three early memories of conflict, the reality management worksheet, the mind shifter targeted journaling tool, the codependence to interdependence list of all the good advice I have for everybody else in my life and how really it's probably good advice for them and it's perfect advice for me. And if you tune into that and you start applying these tools, we'd love to hear from you. Because we're pretty sure that if you step into the application of these tools, it's going to improve your quality of life the way it has for those of us who've been around this work for a while. So, our caller number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we've got 7 or 8 minutes left. If you don't have anything to comment on or question or ask about, we will move into the second portion of our today's show, which would be a replay of the Healing Through Relationships Part 2 talk. So let us hear from you if you have a comment or a question. Otherwise, we'll start about 5 minutes early. We'll start the Healing Through Relationships Part 2 presentation from Michael. And once again, we'll ask for your loving thoughts, blessings, prayers, whatever you'd like to send to Michael and Jeannie for Jeannie's quick recovery from a rather severe case of COVID that she's struggling with. So I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I will start our second segment of the show. And I'll look forward to talking with you again tomorrow. Blessings.
It is so important that if you really want to have conscious, fulfilling, wonderful relationships, that you own and clean up what's going on in your mind through the process of your relationships. Because if you don't, here's what happens. The average person goes through a lot of experiences that are, let's say, to say the least, not pleasant. And so they create files, so to speak, in their mind. They create content of sadness, of rage, of grief, of fear, of pain, of hatred, condemnation, gossip, slander, vengeance, all sorts of things. And what happens is when we look out into the world, we don't, Paul said this, we see as though through a glass darkly. What happens is we look out through our unconscious dynamics. And we're looking for Mr. or Mrs. Right. What are we going to be attracted to? Someone who has similar and matching bags of garbage. But what the average person is going to do is they're going to keep their content hidden and blame their partner for it. And let's imagine that Jeannie and I have this attraction to each other, which we do, and perhaps some of it's based in matching bags of garbage, but of course, we each having our own bags of garbage keep them hidden from me. Jeannie has her bag of garbage and she keeps hers well hidden. And of course, we go on through relationship and we have a great time together and rub shoulders and have fun until one day Jeannie gives me the look. Now, as she gives me the look, up comes some of my painful content. Let's say it's fear. You know, maybe I had a mom who used to give me that look before she was ready to beat on me. So when she gives me the look, up comes my fear. But, of course, I'm now an adult. I'm a big guy, tough. I couldn't have fear. It must be about her. So what do I do? In effect, what I do is I make a carbon copy of my garbage. You really frighten me. And if she buys that, I put that carbon copy into her bag, and her bag gets heavier. Now, probably she's going to have the matching bag of garbage, and her matching bag of garbage to my fear might look like...
When you go into that fear stuff, it really makes me mad.
I love how she gets mad. And so, what did she just do with that language? She just told me that she's got content called anger, and it's all caused by me. If I buy that, I just took a carbon copy of that garbage and put it where? In my bag, and my bag gets heavier. And I put my content in her bag, and together we go to hell. And hell is life carrying bags of garbage. You and I aren't designed for that. You and I are designed for this. If we buy into anything else, we bought into a lie. But when we start to identify with our garbage, we lose our identity. We fall into a state of unconsciousness. But when our unconscious content comes forward, what we tend to do is want to pass it off to somebody else. And we end up loading ourselves and each other up with these bags of garbage. Now, what might the alternative to that be if we actually grew into adulthood? What might that look like? If Jeannie gives me the look and up comes some of my fear, instead of, you really frighten me, I'm going to say, as a responsible adult, you know, Jeannie, when you gave me that look, that really brought fear up for me. I didn't realize I had fear like that. And I'm really ready to work through this. Would you support me in healing?
Yeah.
So now, instead of an enemy to blame it on, I've got a support team to hold the space that supports me healing. If I can't support myself healing. And all healing I would offer happens when we can open our unconscious content in the active presence of love. If I can't keep love conscious, active, and present in me when my painful content comes up, guess what? If I'm not about blaming her, I've got somebody who can support me in healing. Everything's going to change when we do that. Now, once I've taken responsibility for what's in my bag of garbage, and because we had a conflict, gotten to clear some of it out, what's Jeannie's communication probably going to look like?
You know, when you went into that fear, I really felt anger come up in me, and I'm ready to be done with this. Would you support me in working through this?
Yeah. So now, instead of Jeannie putting her content, her anger, into her brain's image of me and insisting that I buy into that and take that carbon copy and put it into my bag of garbage, because we had a conflict, Jeannie gets an opportunity to heal. Jeannie gets an opportunity to throw some of the garbage out of her bag. And so instead of walking around loaded down with this garbage, because we've had a conflict, we each get to look at and throw the garbage content out. And we get to go back to heaven. And I'd offer that's the real purpose of relationship. Relationship, in its most ancient and truest form, is a sacrament. And a sacrament isn't something religious. A sacrament is something designed to take you back to love, to take you back to your original nature. That's the potential if we decide to heal through our relationships instead of pretending the people we're in relationships with are the cause of what's going on inside of us. Now, why is it important to do your work at the moment that this stuff comes up? You don't want to wait till next week to do this. When that stuff surfaces, that's the time to be about doing your work. Because if you don't, here's what happens. When people meet someone, what they do is they open a file, so to speak, in their mind on that person. And when each person opens a file like that, the file is clean and clear, and it's easy to have a great time. But there's this thing called the file folder effect. And what the file folder effect says is that when two files fire at the same time, they automatically link together. And so that example I used earlier, don't think about a purple alligator. You got a file on purple, you got a file on alligator. When those two files fire together, they link. There's what we call that file folder effect, where those two files now connect. And when when one of those files fires, it causes the content of all files hooked into it to also fire. So what happens if we go through relationship, and let's say we've got this file on anger and sadness and fear and hatred and vengeance and grief and pain and gossip and slander and condemnation. Let's say someone does a behavior that resonates our content called anger. When they do, if we're about healing through our relationships, I'm going to say, you showed me my anger, and now that I'm in touch with it, I'm going to be about forgiving it. That is, I remove that toxic content from my physiology. If I don't know that that's possible, if I don't know that there's such a thing as forgiveness, if I don't know that my own content is about me, then what I will tend to do is I will tend to hook my file on anger into my file on that person. Now, forevermore, because of the file folder effect, when I'm in their space, don't think about a purple alligator, when I'm in their space, on some level in my physiology, anger is going to be firing. But, you know, that's pretty well shut down and out of sight, so it's not a big deal. But what if tomorrow they resonate my sadness and my fear and my hatred and my vengeance and my gossip and my slant? What if they resonate all of that and, not knowing that's my content, I hook it into my brain's image of them? One day I wake up and I look at them and say, what the heck am I doing here with you? I don't even like how I feel when I'm around you. I don't like how you make me feel. What is it that I'm feeling? I'm feeling the resonance of my own content that I've hooked into my brain's image of them. And all they have to do is walk into the room, and my mind is going to start to move that content, and I'm going to feel the content of my mind. Now, the average person's solution when that happens is, well, all I have to do is get rid of you. Then everything will be fine. And so they get rid of that person, and they take this file in their mind on that person, and they shrink it down, and it's just one more file in the mind. They look out the only way they can, through their own unconscious dynamics, looking for Mr. or Mrs. Right. And somebody who resonates their content shows up, and they behave so perfectly that they help me to keep all of my painful content hidden away. And I open a nice new file on them, and I go, wow, are they ever wonderful. Now, I can't tell you how many people I've worked with over the years that say, you know, I just don't get it. It's so desperate. Every relationship turns out the same way. Why? Because it's all done with smoke and mirrors. It's all an inside job. If you don't have the tools with which to heal through relationship, if you don't do your work, then every relationship ends up the same way. Because it isn't going to be long. If you put two people together in a room for very long, sooner or later, they're going to step on each other's bags of garbage. That's just the way it is. You know, they say absence makes the heart grow fonder. Absence doesn't make the heart grow fonder. Absence means that I've got nobody around to resonate my garbage. So my file on them isn't filled with all that stuff, and I go, they're pretty cool. But it's not long before they come back in and all this stuff starts to resonate again. They say familiarity breeds contempt. Familiarity doesn't breed contempt. When somebody's around long enough to be familiar and I hook all this garbage in knowing that it, or not knowing that it's mine, then I think they're the problem and my contempt will be pointed at them. Where I point my hostility is where I want somebody else to be responsible for the content of my physiology. I am only experiencing some form of hostility or fear because my physiology has content of hostility or fear. So if I go into a relationship with Mr. or Mrs. Wright, and one day they resonate my anger, I don't have the tools, I don't know it's mine, I hook in my anger, I hook in my sadness, I hook in my fear, I hook in my hatred, my vengeance. I get up one morning, it's like, what am I doing here with you? I don't even like how you make me feel. You can't feel anybody else's. If somebody's making you feel something, what they're doing is they're resonating your content and showing you what you need to work through. It's got nothing to do with them. When you say, you made me feel, because you can't feel what isn't in your physiology, but you can take the opportunity to grow up. There's a line in, I think it's in the book of Thomas, one of the books that didn't make it into the canonized scriptures, where Yeshua is talking to the disciples. He says, you know, you're like a bunch of little kids in the square running around. Nah, 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 nah. Look what you did to me. Nobody can do anything to you that you don't have in your physiology. And if you hook it all in, you'll swear it's all about them. And the solution to life is, all I have to do is get rid of them. And so, this person will get rid of someone. They'll close that file down. It will just become one more file in the mind, and the problem is gone. That is, they're now able to successfully hide it. Once again, they look out. Mr. or Mrs. Wright shows up. They open a new file. These neural pathways are now so well established that oftentimes by the next morning, there's been a mass dump of all of this, and it's like, what the hell am I doing here with you? Anybody? I hear a lot of grins and laughs going on with that. Yeah, how recognizable is that? And it's all done with smoke and mirrors. These relationships that can show you your hostility or fear are relationships that are showing you the hidden parts of your own mind, the parts that you've denied and suppressed. How can you tell that? It's because you're feeling it. You know, if you think it's somebody else's fault that you're feeling this way, ask yourself the question, how is it possible that they're the one with the problem when I'm the one with the pain? Something about that doesn't make any sense. I have pain because I have content that violates my structure. And if I put my pain into my brain's image of them, I have a problem because I'm going to end up taking out my hostility and fear on them as if they could possibly change my mind. I would offer that relationships do not die. Relationships must be killed. And they are killed when we hook our unresolved painful energies into our brain's image of them. And it's not even just our unresolved energies, it is the unresolved energies of the generations. You know, when they said the sins of the father will be passed, they were saying the energies that are off the mark are passed from generation to generation. And that wasn't a theological threat. God's going to get you for what somebody did. It's just, here's how the system works. If you put unresolved hostility or fear into your system and you conceive a child, that child would have in its structure every thought you've ever thought, every feeling you've ever felt, every reality you've ever engaged in. If you don't ever undo, in the context of conflict in your relationships, those realities of pain and trauma, you will have an endless series of relationships. When you begin to undo, and you start to hook something different into your brain's image of them, when you consciously, purposely choose to focus on, if somebody resonates your anger, oh, thanks for showing me my anger. Would you support me in healing? Learn how to forgive what you put into your brain's image of your brother, and you'll be alleviated of that anger. Once you have, then start a new file on the wonderment and the love that comes from the experience of connecting with another being. You don't experience love in your relationships from the person you're in relationship with. The place you experience love is singular. It is when you experience the presence of your own being in the context of your relationships. We can have people who live in being that support us experiencing ourselves living in being, but our love doesn't come from them. Our love comes from the direct experience of who we are. And when we recognize that our experience of love comes from who we are, it isn't dependent on what another does. Remember again, Yeshua said, I'm in this world, not of this world. What he was saying is, I have none of that painful content, and therefore, nobody can do it to me. In fact, there's a place where the disciples are kind of dressing Yeshua down and say, you know, that guy really socked it. Why don't you sock it to him? And Yeshua says, I have none of that in my store. And you can't sock it to anybody else. You get the original of every energy that you engage in. It goes into your field. They get a carbon copy. And they may not be on for delivery. It's all an inside job. It all comes from what's going on inside of you. And once you recognize how this dynamic operates, then in taking responsibility, you actually communicate. And in doing that, the relationship gets into higher and higher and higher and more connected states continuously. If you utilize the language of hostility or fear, a really common language in our culture around relationships, in fact, it's shown in the media as fun and funny and humor. You watch so many TV shows, and it's one zinger thrown after another at a family member or a so-called loved one. Sarcasm at every turn. Now, if you look at the word sarcasm means to tear flesh. It's the root of it. That's where it comes from. I come from a family system. I have some uncles, especially, that if they never used sarcasm, they couldn't have ever had a word spoken between them. And what I discovered when I started to look at it, and when I was brought up in a system where that was considered clever and funny, just like the media shows it, but as I started to really look at it, what I discovered for me was that sarcasm is our culture's socially acceptable way of expressing otherwise unexpressible rage. If you take that as feedback, and every time you want to use sarcasm, you stop and you go, huh, I've got a file on rage that I'm trying to hook into my brain's image of them. I think I'll stop. And in stopping, I think I will move into connecting to love and asking for support to heal my rage. And as I do that, this most magical thing happens. Through my relationships, I get to heal. It's a phenomenal event. And the deeper I go into my own process, the deeper and more painful parts of my mind I will find. This is desirable. You want to do that. You want to be able to go into the generations, because what you clean up in you, you open on an energetic level for everybody in your bloodline to clean it up in them. You open up for those who are dead and gone. You open up for those who are your children. Anybody ever notice that having a child is like having your unconscious mind hanging out in true living color and Dolby sound? Why is that? It's because the energies that we hold are passed to the next generation intact. They come out of exactly the same pattern as you do, but they don't have a stop button attached. So they play out whatever it is that you haven't dealt with. When you begin to deal with it, you get to heal. You open the energy window for them to heal, and their children and their children. It's one of the greatest gifts that you can give to your whole family line. That is healing yourself through your relationships. One of the things that I sadly and oftentimes see happen is that people end relationships at the place where the relationship holds the most promise. And that happens because people don't understand what's happening, what's going on, and they don't have the tools to do anything about it. You know, one of the things I talk about in the workshop, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, is a thing called a vitality meter. And let's imagine that the vitality meter of a person goes from 1 to 10. 10 would be full level vitality. When you're at full vitality, you can't hide anything from yourself. People will do behaviors that suppress their vitality when they want to be able to hide something from themselves. So as an energy system, what this person will do when, let's say, something comes in they don't want to be responsible for, is they'll go out and junk themselves out. They'll go out and do drugs. They'll go out and do crazy things unconsciously to weaken themselves so that they can suppress and hide what they don't want to deal with. Now, let's imagine this person gets themselves down to a level 5 vitality. They have a level 7 toxin. They have a level 8 toxin and a 9 and some level 10 stuff. But that 7, 8, 9, and 10 stuff is well hidden when they're at a level 5 vitality. The body-mind unit will not yield that up when they're at that level of vitality. Let's imagine that in a particularly connected moment, they find themselves in relationship with someone who, yes, has the matching bag of garbage, but they do have a connectedness as well in their being. I don't think it's usually total one way or the other. There's some combination. But let's imagine that this person also has this vitality meter set at a 5. And so, having been born in being in love at a 10, they've driven themselves down to the point where they live at a 5, and that means they're pretty much in control of their garbage and they can keep it well hidden. They pull together with somebody and they really start to connect with this person. And when you get two level 5 vitalities that really start to connect, you end up with a 10. And what happens? All hell breaks loose. Everything they never wanted to deal with starts to come up in their face. And it only comes up when they're vitalized around their partner. And they go, I'm feeling this because of you. It's all your fault. Rather than, I'm feeling this because I've got this garbage in my field, and thanks for vitalizing me so that I can see it and start to move through it. Sadly enough, when that stuff starts to come up, because people don't have the tools to communicate responsibly, don't have the personal code to function differently, they function out of the patterns of the previous generations, which means they cut off relationship, even though they may live in the same house together, or they're gone, and the relationship is over, at a time when it held the highest levels of promise. And so what we want to do is to begin to develop a new personal code that will carry us through those times. Everyone has a personal code. Your personal code demands of you that in certain situations you behave in certain ways. Paul, for instance, speaks about his personal code. And his personal code contains things that he does not want to feel, does not want to look at, and does not want to deal with. And so what does Paul say? Why is it the things I would not do are what I do? So what Paul is saying is, I have things in my being that I don't want to deal with, and I don't know how to get rid of them, but my personal code, when somebody triggers them, calls for me to behave in a way that I don't like behaving. Has anybody here ever done something against your own will and choice? Do you know why you did it? You did it because your personal code demanded that you do it. You have a generational personal code, and for most people that personal code develops totally and completely unconsciously. They make it up at the moments when they're in their worst hostility and fear. Anybody ever find that you've had really great creative resolution when you're in your hostility or fear? No, but they make it up when, boy, if they ever do that again, I'm going to... And that emotional energy becomes part of the personal code. And then they wonder why, when somebody gives them the look and their garbage starts to break loose, they start socking it to their partner. Now, of course, after they've done that, and they're full of repentance, they'll say, and dear, I'm never going to do that to you again. Have you ever heard that line? Guess what? You don't have a choice about that. If your personal code calls for you to behave a certain way in a certain situation, guess what? You will do the things you don't want to do against your own will and choice until you take charge of and change your personal code. So what we're going to offer as a solution in tonight's workshop, as a set of tools, is a personal code for starting to change the way we behave in relationships. And each of these people in this relationship have a personal code. Person one has a personal code. Person two has a personal code. Put two people together long enough, often enough, and their personal codes are going to conflict. They're going to step on each other's personal code. But in the Aramaic, they had this third entity called the Pagra, and the Pagra had a personal code. And ideally, what happened was that when two people came together in relationship, out of a high connected creative state, they chose how they were going to live. If you're living in non-being, you're stuck with the decisions of the generations. There is no choice, it's just decisions. When you move to being, one of the faculties of your being is choice. So in a high connected state, these two people made a commitment and created a personal code that when their individual codes came into conflict with each other, they committed to turn to. So here's how we're going to behave in this situation. So now it doesn't become, anybody here ever been in a power struggle in a relationship? What happened? Why were you in a power struggle? Because your personal code said this is how we have to do it, and their personal code said no, this is how we have to do it. And never the twain shall meet. But here's what happened in the Aramaic, is that these two people ideally entered into a pagra consciously. Together, out of love, out of being, they formed a personal code, and then they agreed that if their personal codes came into conflict with each other, they would each yield to the personal code of the pagra. All of a sudden, the power struggles are over. Each one turned to the code of the personal or of the pagra. They turned to the personal code of the pagra, in the case of conflict and said, and what was it that we agreed to do? Oh, well, my mind says I should do, but you know something? I'm committed to this. And so you don't have to overpower me and tell me what to do, and I don't have to overpower you. We will each together turn toward the personal code of the Pagra, and in doing so, we will create a whole different way of behaving. Now you found a way to escape from insane personal codes that are based in hostility or fear when the chips are down and the stress is up. Remember, the behavior levels key into how much stress there is. It's so important to know how to get the proper kind of stresses. Do a workshop called Getting the Stress You Need. Guess what? Without stress, you'd be dead. You have to have stress. But there are qualities of stress you don't need, and you better figure out how to create the qualities of stress that you do need and how to get rid of the qualities of stress that you don't need, or these behaviors based in your power person will take over at the most inopportune moments. If you're really going to create relationship through which you choose to heal, then you create a conscious personal code. And you put into your personal code that first and foremost, I will follow the personal code I'm committed to. What we know is that when a mind is in hostility or fear, now, you can have all the wonderful awareness you want, but when your mind goes into hostility or fear, all those wonderful things are out the window. You turn back to your personal code, and you do what the personal code of your generations tells you to do, even if it's the most horrific stuff and saying things that are just terrible and awful, because that's what's in your generational memory. But when you make a commitment to a higher personal code, what happens is that where the mind in hostility or fear cannot guide you to higher behavior, it just can't happen. When your hostility or fear is up, your mind cannot show you a behavior with which to alleviate that stress. When your personal code includes, I go back and connect with love before I choose any behavior, then when hostility or fear comes up, that becomes a trigger to go back and connect with love. Now, that's going to take some practice. That's not an overnight thing. It's going to take some practice to get to the point where you're able to do that. But it is doable. It takes some work. But when you stop and think that it's taken, gee, how many generations? You know, Jeannie and I did that demonstration a little while ago, and we turned from projection communication, you made me angry, to, you know, when you said thus and so, that brought a lot of fear up in me, and I'd like to heal my fear. Would you support me? How many people here were brought up in a family system where when there was a conflict, one person in the conflict turned to the other and said, you know, that really brought some fear or some anger up in me, and I'd love to heal my anger. Would you support me? How many have ever watched a television show where the hero and the heroine were in conflict, and the hero turned to the heroine and said, you know, when you said thus and so, that brought fear up in me. I'd like to heal my fear. How many have ever watched a movie, seen a play, read a book, and sadly, in many cases, been in a church where two people in conflict said, you know, I think this might be an opportunity for us to heal. I'm feeling fear. I notice you're feeling anger. Let's join in healing that. Have you seen that? Is that a pretty common occurrence you've seen in your world around you as you've grown up? And most people have never seen it in their lives. What's been modeled our whole lives long is communication that's about projection. You made me angry. You made me sad. You made me afraid. You're responsible for the content of my mind. I'm just your innocent victim. Well, excuse me, folks. There are no innocent victims. There are only volunteers. And all you have to do to volunteer to show up with somebody victimizing you is to put in, I'm not responsible for the content of my mind. There will be 1,000 volunteers that will show up to support you in proving that you're a victim. And it's time to drop the story. One of the ways, and this is just one of the tools, each of the workshops that we do provides a different tool for how to achieve the result that we're talking about. But one of the tools that we're going to offer, or the tool of tonight's workshop, is called My Commitment. And so I'm going to invite Jeannie to come up and share with me in demonstrating a commitment. Now, let's imagine that Jeannie and I come together and we'll let this lectern represent our problem. Now, of course, I stand back here and I look at the problem and I look at Jeannie. Now, I don't see me in this picture, right? So it's really very clear to me whose problem it is, right? Now, this whole time, what am I looking at? I'm looking at the content of my own brain cell structure. Remember the igloo, the two-door igloo? How much content did it take to have that complex reality come up? If you've been through a why is this happening to me again and again and again in your relationships, how much content do you have to keep seeing that two-door igloo? You've got to have a lot. It's going to take work to move through it. But in this case, of course, it's clear to me whose problem it is. Now, of course, Jeannie stands there and she looks out and she doesn't see herself, but she sees the problem. Cancel this thought, but she knows whose problem it is, right? What's Jeannie looking at? She's looking at the content of her mind and putting it on the framework that resonates it. Now, if we both function out of the generational personal code, chances are things are going to go awry pretty quickly. But if we have a way of doing it differently, if we have a personal code that we practice and use on a regular basis, then we'll replace the generational personal code made up and based in hostility and fear and change it into something that will transform our relationship. And when we get enough people who are willing to do that, we will transform the way our world works. You know, there's a really important physics principle that was enunciated by Yeshua 2,000 years ago. And he said, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. You know, we don't have to go out and get every angry, rageful, murderous, war-making person in the world to stop doing that. All we have to do is become someone who lives out of a personal code based in love. And if we can get a critical mass, if we can get a core number of people who will do that, then our whole process is going to shift and change. And so what I'd like to do is present a personal code that we've developed to work within the context of relationship when there are conflicts. I'm just going to invite Jeannie to relax and take a seat. And Jeannie, what I'm going to do, and this is especially, of course, if there is conflict, is I'm going to promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth. Now, many people who live in non-being believe that the last thing to be in touch with is the truth. They hate the truth. In fact, one famous person said, most people, if they bumped into truth on the street, would get up and brush themselves off and rush away. Why? Because most people love their own opinions more than the truth. If truth isn't in your relationship, you're functioning out of non-being. Non-being believes that the truth would destroy it, and it's right. If the truth shows up, if love shows up, everything made of hostility and fear is going to fall apart. In the spiritual traditions, going through that stage in your growth process was called the dark night of the soul. It will happen in the context of relationship. Not many people can do that process off somewhere by themselves. It takes relationship to open that space. And so, truth is equated in the ancient teachings with love. Love only shows up in your relationships when truth shows up. Now, part of the agreement in choosing to tell the truth is that we agree to identify each other as the beings that we are, rather than something that we've done at some point in the past. And so, as I choose to tell the truth, rather than identifying me as something I did, you know, if there's a part of me that holds some kind of pain or trauma that I can't resolve on my own, if I can bring the truth of that forward and speak my truth, and there's something not true about it, in the presence of active love from Jeannie's being, I'll get to heal that. That's one of the powerful things about telling the truth. Only when the truth has been told is there room for real love. Can there possibly be the presence of real love? So I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth and be true to you. It's interesting how our culture says, you know, do whatever you want. It really doesn't matter. Laissez-faire, you know. I've actually heard of so-called psychologists who say to somebody, you know, if you're being intimate with your partner and they don't turn you on, think about the latest movie star. What a violation of this human energy system. We don't have the right to be in someone else's intimate space unless we're invited and have full permission to be there, even in our thoughts. And yet, they say, oh, well, you know, you can look, you just don't touch. Excuse me, there was a man named Yeshua who came along 2,000 years ago. They say in the Greek translations that he said, I come not to destroy the law, but to fulfill it. In Aramaic, what he said was, I come not to destroy the law, but to teach you its fullness. And one of the things he said is, if you've done it in your mind, you've done it. One of the requirements of real relationship is integrity. Integrity in your being. That you don't even step outside of your commitment in relationship in your thoughts. No, you don't look but not touch. You don't daydream and not touch. Because if you do, that's the starting point for the violation of your field. And it is, in that instant, a violation of your relationships. A simple tool that can be used. Now, if we've been structured with, well, it doesn't really matter what you do in your mind. You can daydream all day. You can fantasize about it. It doesn't matter. If we've been trained that, it's going to be a challenge to start to make a shift and actually be true in relationships. The first place to be true is in your mind. And so if you find yourself attracted to someone else, then be conscious about that energy and utilize that very energy to take you back to your commitment to your relationship. And out of that attraction comes the solidification of your commitment, because you're committed to being true in your relationship. And true means in thought, word, action, and appearance, all levels of energy. I commit to always be sweetness in your life and to nurture you daily. Now, if we've got a personal code that says, well, you know, if I get up and I don't feel so hot, I can be as snarly as I want with her, and, you know, by tonight she should forget about it. What kind of insanity is that? So what's my new Pagra? What's my new personal code that comes from the Pagra? I'm going to be about sweetness. If my mind feels sour, I better get about handling my sour mind, instead of taking it out on the people around me. And when I do, my own sourness becomes an impetus to my healing. It supports me in healing. And so I'm committed to being sweetness in your life, and I'm committed to nurturing you every day. You look at people who go through relationship on a daily basis, and you know, you'd look at them and you'd wonder, what are they doing together? Why did they ever come together? There's so much snarly, you know, out of integrity energy. What's going on here? And what happens is people come into a relationship with their bag of garbage, and the relationship becomes about the bag of garbage. The garbage gets in between them, and they forget what the relationship is about. If someone in relationship, two people, actually every day stopped and had a thought, what can I do to nurture you? can I do to support you today? How long could those disintegrative energies stay present in relationship? So a new personal code says, I'm going to nurture you every day. And I'm going to treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect. Now, some people say, well, gee, after what she just did, why would you treat her lovingly, gently, and with respect? Well, you know, if what she did brought up a part of my mind that holds some form of hostility, fear, or pain, I need healing. How do I get to heal in that situation? I get to heal when I connect with my being instead of get lost in my hostility and fear, and I bring my being through my hostility and fear to her. If I do that, who gets the impact of that love present? I do. It's not something I'm doing for her. Is it a nice thing to do for her? Is it nice when she does that for me? Sure is. But I am in the need of healing if she gives me the look. Anybody here know somebody who knows how to give you the look? If she gives me the look and it brings up my hostility and fear, that's my content. I need healing. So when I bring my presence, my being, through that part of my mind, I get to heal. So I'm going to treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect. And you want to do this on three levels of energy. I'm going to do this in my thoughts, my words, and my actions, whether I'm in your presence or not. Now, why three levels of energy? Well, you know, if you're into physically abusive action, that's a relatively easy thing to stop. You just put your hands down and stop. Thought, or words? Whole different level of challenge. In fact, in the ancient scriptures, they said the person who could control their own tongue was mightier than one who could take a city. That's what kind of power it takes to take charge of your own tongue. So to move into words that are loving, gentle, and respectful. And then to go to the next level of opportunity, and that is to key in with thoughts that are loving, gentle, and respectful. And if thoughts that are less than that come up, to be responsible for them and start to move them out. So loving, gentle, and respectful in my thoughts, words, or actions, whether I'm in your presence or not. People say, well, you know, I'm over here on the other side of town talking to somebody. What do they know? What does she know that I'm saying? There's only one thing we know of. Now that we know we live in an energetic world, there's only one thing we know of that can stop the high energy wave that leaves the mind when we think a thought. That's another set of brain cells that's in tune with it. She gets every thought I think about her. I get every thought she thinks about me, every word that's said. There is a resonance. There is an energy that transfers. An example of that, I worked with a woman in South Florida. I used to have a private practice down there. And this woman had a daughter who, 8 years earlier, when she was 11 years of age, ran away from home. She hasn't heard from her in 8 years. She doesn't know if her daughter is dead or alive. Pretty painful situation. We do some forgiveness work and some still point breathing work around that issue. She hasn't heard from her daughter in 8 years. 3 days later, the phone rings, and her daughter's calling from California. Hey, Mom, just wanted to touch in and say hello and let you know I'm okay and make sure you are. There's continuous communication on that level of energy, even when we're not aware of it. Oftentimes, we're not aware of what it is that prompts those energies within us. So whether I'm in your presence or not, in every interaction I commit to affection for you. And if my mind wants to do hostility and fear, then I better be about changing my mind. This is my work. This is about how I get to change my personal code. And when I allow myself to live this new personal code, it will put me in direct contact with the parts of my old personal code that are insane. And I'll get the opportunity to work through them. So I commit to affection for you, to look for and acknowledge the highest and best in you as I surrender to love our true nature. In the ancient Aramaic language, to look for the highest and best in another was to have humility toward that person. Humility's got nothing to do with groveling in the earth like a worm. It is the ability to look for and acknowledge the highest and best in another. It's amazing how many people go in the exact opposite direction. They're always looking for the lowest and the worst. And on an energetic level, the impact that has is if I'm looking for the lowest and worst, then I'm always gathering the lowest and worst. And my thoughts are based on the lowest and worst. What do we know happens with thought? It becomes a molecule, a neuropeptide. It lands on a cell. The cell replicates a chemistry, chemically. So once I think that lowest and worst thought, I get to live with the chemistry of my thought. If I have humility, then by looking for the highest and best, I'm always gathering the highest and best from my world, and it's building literally the chemical structure of my cell up and up and up. Now, we do a workshop called On Creating Consciously, where we prove to you that there's no such thing as chemistry, but that's a different level of understanding. At this stage, what we look at is mind energy becomes flesh. Mind energy becomes your cellular so-called chemical structure. So when I can look for the highest and best, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to surrender to love our true nature. So once again, I'm affirming here that our real nature is that of love, and I'm going to surrender to it. Now, many who live in hostility and fear, well, don't talk to me about that surrender stuff, man. I'm not surrendering to anybody. In order to do a behavior, you have to surrender to something. You either surrender to this mind, and in the ancient teachings, this is what was called the mind of Christ. Remember Paul said, and this is one of the pieces Paul had, he said the goal of the work was to be of like mind with Christ. What mind did Christ think with? He thought with the mind of love. God is love. It is the mind of God. That's all. Relationship with God's really simple. It's not even religious. When you're in relationship with love, you're in relationship with God. And when you're not, you're not. You have a problem. And so I can go with that mind and surrender to what it advises me to do. And what it will always advise me to do is to live according to that higher personal code. Or I can turn to my hostility and fear, and it will advise me as to what I should do. I'll surrender to that. There is only a choice of which you surrender to. There's no choice about the fact that there's surrender. And I'll tell you that it's always safest and best to surrender to your highest nature, love. My connection to my source, my relationship with you, and our serenity will always be more important than any issues. She's got issues. I know it. And you know she does this. Don't believe it. And I've got issues. You know, I don't care how long you do this work. When we're looking at 1,000 generations, there's work to be done. So when I recognize that I come with my issues, she comes with her issues, and the issues come up, it's like, oh, gee, we got an issue here. Can one or both of us stay connected to love when our issue comes forward? Then through that interaction, we are each going to get to heal. But if we lose it, then if I can't surrender to love and remember that that is my real nature and that my relationship is more important than the issue, then what I want, pardon me, then what I want to do if I can't surrender to love, if I can't remember that my relationship is more important than the issue, is I want to set the issue aside. I don't want to put the issue right in front of the relationship, which so many people do. And so if we find that we're both going unconscious and neither of us can stay connected to love, it's like, okay, you know, this looks like a major issue. Let's put this one on the shelf and we'll come back to it later. And then get back to a behavior that reconnects you to love. As you do that, then reconnected to love, you start to move through those issues. My serenity, our serenity, is more important than our issues. And so if we're not maintaining that serenity, we need to wake up to who we are. I open my heart to embrace you in my love, and I open my heart to be embraced in your love. And so the truth is we can't really love each other because love isn't a verb, it's a noun, it's the stuff we're made of. And so we can open our being to embrace ourselves and each other. And as we do, we'll each begin to heal. So I open my heart to embrace you in my love, and I open my heart to receive your embrace. And you start moving into higher and higher states of connectedness rather than resonating out of the bags of garbage. Now, if you make this commitment, guess what's going to happen? All hell is going to break loose. Because the more committed you are to cleaning up your garbage, the faster the garbage is going to come up to be removed. So there is a piece in the commitment that is about what's going to happen, and that is, if anything less than love comes up, I'm going to hold this in my heart and listen. Now, it's amazing how many people are so busy in their story. Oh, they can repeat what their partner said, but they weren't listening. I'm going to open my heart and listen as we each learn to speak, experience, and be responsible for our own realities. I'm here for and with you, keeping communication open and keeping love conscious, active, and present as we heal, celebrate life, and grow together. So once you commit to that and stuff starts to move, then you get the opportunity. So now let's imagine once again, here's our issue, and up it comes. What does the average person do when an issue comes up? You know, they're hanging out with each other and things are wonderful, but up comes the issue and all of a sudden they step back, each pointing the finger at the other. Well, now with this new personal code, we've got a set of tools. Gee, you know, it looks like we've created a dandy here. And we stay connected and go, what are we going to do to address this? Each of us is probably going to have some form of hostile or fearful reality to work through. So then the question becomes, who gets to go first? It's whoever's most insane at the moment. So if I'm the one that's most insane, then I'm going to ask Jeannie to set aside whatever's going on for her and become the space of love that supports my healing, because I'm going unconscious. I've got hostility and fear that's taking over, and I'm losing the ability to stay connected to love. But I am learning to speak, experience, and be responsible for my realities, and so Jeannie's active presence of love becomes my support for healing, helps me to dissolve my insanity. Once we've completed that, then we're going to reverse roles. I'm going to set aside my reality, and I'm going to become the space of support for Jeannie, being able to speak, experience, and be responsible for her reality. And as we do that, our matching bags of garbage are going to dissolve. And as they dissolve, the load is lifted. Diseases will heal. Conflicts will disappear. Abundance will become natural. Aliveness, joy, and creativity that you never fathomed possible becomes available to you. Because as you remove those old hostile, fearful energies that were suppressed, what you find is new levels of capability that come from the generations. And your physiology becomes more powerful support for keeping the mind of love active and present in you. And we are here to join you and every mind on the planet, living in the mind of Christ and being the love of God in the world. That's your true nature.